Board games where strategy meets laughter and every roll of the dice is a chance for your villagers to go hungry. In this episode, JK opens the doors to his mind palace while he yells at kids to get off his lawn. We go Paleolithic and attempt to feed our people with this week's game of the show, Stone Age. And you, the Gleeples, get to play along as the hosts get put in the hot seat with this week's game challenge. So gather your tools, sharpen your arrows, and remember, if the hut is rocking, don't come a knocking.
Hey, I'm Dwayne.
I'm Emily.
Hey, JK. Happy Easter. I didn't eat any peeps because I don't like peeps.
And I'm James. I don't like peeps either.
Okay, so let's get into this. Easter candy, y'all. Whoppers Robin eggs. So good. Now, I know the malt flavor is going to be a pass for some people, Oh my goodness. They are a great treat with a cup of coffee in the morning.
Reese's chocolate eggs.
Also delicious. Yep.
Those are my fave for sure.
I think there was a poll where it was like Cadbury chocolate eggs versus Reese's chocolate eggs, and it was a near 50-50 split last time I saw.
Wow. So.
Cadbury eggs feel good because you can really only get that flavor once a year. Maybe twice now. Maybe they're doing like scare eggs for Halloween.
Yeah.
How about a strawberry milk chocolate bunny?
Ew.
Okay. I could see trying that.
Strawberry chocolate bunny? No.
No, no. I'm not a huge chocolate fan. Like my heart is with Reese's, but outside of Reese's, I don't eat a whole lot of chocolate.
Dark chocolate all day.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Dark chocolate is meh.
I mean, not 100% dark chocolate. That's too dark. 90%? Yeah. 90% dark chocolate. Somewhere in that neighborhood.
10% less bitter.
So I have probably no longer a surprise anymore, but it is a riddle. I have a riddle for you guys.
Can I select surprise?
These hurt my brain.
In craftsmen's hands, my pieces find their place, forming walls of elegance and grace. With every move, a masterpiece grows, a tile or two broken, an artist's woes. In rows and columns, they cascade. A tile placed is a tile played. Each bonus given will aid towards fame. From Portugal's beauty, I draw my name.
Is it Azul?
It is Azul.
I think we all got that one.
Yeah,
very
I made
nice.
This one easy.
It was really nice. I went on a few different places of board game names and then just the tiles, laying them down, all the columns and rows. I'm like, all right, we got it.
Well, then he said Givens, and I heard Gibbons. So I was like, how did monkeys involved in this?
Givens?
Given?
Where did I say Givens?
Given? What did you say? Check the script.
Form elegance and grace with every move, a masterpiece, artist's woes, rows and columns, cascade, tiles played. Given? A bonus given.
Bonus given.
Oh,
yes.
There we go.
See, bonus given.
I clearly right. heard bonus given.
Arc Nova.
You know, if you have enough bonus givens, eventually you'll have the entire works of Shakespeare.
Fair. And a lot of pink butts.
So I got to say, all this talk last week about crowdfunding and some Kickstarters and anticipation games, I felt like I've been good this year so far on backing games. I've restricted myself, and then March rolled around. And I'm going to let you guys know.
What happened in March?
I've kind of let myself go a little bit.
All right.
Oh, no.
You got Roth, correct?
I did. I got Roth.
Okay.
Yep.
I went ahead and backed Veiled Fate and the expansion.
Nice.
Yesterday, which I said I was going to do. I also did not need to make a stop at the local game store, but I did, and picked up Kutna Hora, the City of Silver, which has, I'm just going to be a little bit critical right out of the gate, one of the worst box arts I've seen in a long time.
It is
just dull and boring, and then you open up the box and it's colorful and lively and there's a whole lot going on. I did also pick up an expansion to Smash Up, which they are paying homage to 80s classic films. One of the factions you can choose, if you're familiar with Smash Up, you take two factions, mash them together, and play a card game. One of the factions was the Wraith Rustlers.
Nice. I see your Ghostbusters, right? Your thinly veiled Ghostbusters, not legally binding IP there.
Exactly. That made me laugh.
Backed a game called Etherfields. Etherfields. Etherstone.
Oh,
Etherfields is a game that already exists. Etherstone.
which is a card dueling game, but for more than two people, but from the designers of like Darwin's Journey.
Okay.
And Grand Austria Hotel. So these Euro designers making a card game. I'm just out of curiosity, I had to back it just to see because I love Darwin's Journey.
Okay.
That's one I still need to try.
We can fix that sometime.
I've got one more sitting on my reserved list for Kickstarter that I think ultimately I'm going to pass on because I just don't really want it badly enough to spend. But it's something about the River Glassworks. All plays come out with it. It's just it looks like it's a little set collection with nice glassy pieces. Again, my weakness, shiny stuff. It's got shiny stones and neat acrylic parts. And that really kind of makes me want the game, but that means I got to spend an extra $30 on top of the normal price. So probably just going to let that one slide.
Yeah. And then the last one we both probably did, which Inventors of the South Tigris.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. I wasn't going to, cause like you said last week, I mean, scholars kind of
hurt
a little bit. I didn't click for me. So I was ready to leave it, you know, behind, but man, they priced their games so well, when they do Kickstarters and, you know, I got the first two, just, it's a trilogy. Just I'm all in. So I went ahead and got it. We'll see. It looks better, I feel like, although heavier, but something about it seems to click more than Scholars. So,
since our last recording, I have been able to not back anything on Kickstarter, which I feel like is it's a good direction to be going in.
That's exemplary self-control.
I know. I was impressed. But I've also cleared time to play the big Kickstarter from, what, a year, 2 years ago that JK and I both backed, which is Marvel United and Marvel X-Men.
Yay.
I got, what, five plays of that in over the last week. So that's been pretty good.
I'm really excited about the way March turned out. We did have Tennessee Game Days, which I think I played a total of 20 games over the course of three days.
So jealous.
But when you look at what I played in January and February, which were both really kind of sad, dismal months for me, a lot of games played this last month. I'm really excited.
Yeah, I saw everyone's March played lists, and I had to miss Tennessee Game Days, and it made me sad to see my list compared to y'all's. Guys, I'm a little scared.
Why are you scared?
JK has this look in his eyes, and it has me worried.
Yes. Yes. I've been looking forward to this segment since we started talking about this podcast. And listeners, you should probably know, sitting in the room with me are three people that have laptops in front of them, copious notes, a lot of prep work going into these shows. They're lucky if I show up with a post-it note that says don't curse. So we've been talking about this segment that we're going to roll into here shortly that they have no idea what's coming. I have not given them any preparation, no idea what topic we're going to discuss.
I'm so nervous.
No, you guys have no clue. And I love this. There's there's this look of fear, subtle fear in your eyes that I'm really kind of enjoying. What topic are we? What's the segment called, James?
JK yells at clouds.
Yes. So I think generally, as things go, I'm a fairly easygoing guy. It takes a lot to really get me riled up. And even when I do get upset about something, I tend to bottle it up and just kind of keep it inside and push it down into the nether realms of my stomach. I'm also...
That might cause you problems.
It could. Yeah. You know, there are
indigestion.
Yeah, there have been therapy sessions to talk about this. I'm also, you know, a middle-aged guy. I'm fairly set in my ways. When someone wants to get me to change, it's an act of God to do so. I'm pretty stubborn when it comes to things. So I am really looking forward to this segment where I can, you know, take some of those things that irritate me and have been under my skin for a while and vent about them. Why do I choose to do that now? Because I have a podcast and because I have literally tens of people that will listen to me and... And maybe they'll agree with me, maybe they won't, but maybe there's a little nugget of wisdom in here that people might go, oh, you know what? Now that I look at it JK's way, I think he's onto something here.
That's what I'm very interested, and I've been thinking about this like for a week now, about like what you are about to bring to the table, because I think we might have mentioned this like in the first episode, but I'm like the newest of this group to this hobby of like more kind of like next level serious board gaming. And so I'm just like waiting to see if any of your opinions, like I either share or like have even spent a single minute thinking about, or if it's all just going to be new to me.
And we workshopped the name of the segment. I think we've settled on JK Yells at Clouds. It was originally going to be something along the lines of JK's controversial opinion, which maybe these aren't controversial opinion. Maybe I'm just wrong. And that's the way I think, and everybody else is going to fight against me on this. That's okay. I think it's a good chance for also this group, who we all kind of tend to think very similarly. We're in agreement on a lot of things. I believe that this section could go off the rails. You guys might just want to beat me up unbelievably over this. Did I talk with you guys about any of the possible segment ideas for this on what I wanted to cover or no?
That's why we're trembling, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And now I feel you're just like leading us on, like what's about to happen.
All right. So digging into this topic here, I've had a little time to think about this. And I'm going to throw some reasoning in behind this once I drop this major bombshell on you guys. Because there's a couple factors that come into play as to why I feel a certain way about this thing. But let's just throw this out here. There's a website that members of our group are really involved in, that they're really passionate about, that they enjoy using, and it is called Board Game Arena.
Really starting in with the...
Oh, we're coming out hot.
Coming in hot.
I can't stand Board Game Arena. I absolutely hate the whole thought of the idea.
Why do you hate fun?
I don't hate fun. And let me say, there is a couple things you should know about my relationship with BGA. Since the pandemic, I have been a preferred subscriber. I have an account with them, and I do pay them on an annual basis to use their service, which I don't use. Part of my idea behind paying them is I want to support them, and I want to support their growth and help them fund to make a better product than what they have right now, because what they have right now just isn't very good. They have an amazing variety of games on their website. I do like that. They are constantly adding new games. I think we just saw this last week that Terraforming Mars made its debut, even though there's been an app for Terraforming Mars for quite some time. And I do feel like the games they put on their site, they're doing a pretty good, solid representation of those games. It's not like they're culling pieces away to make it simpler to put it on an online platform. It's pretty much the game in digital form. That's where my problem starts. I am a very tactile person. One of the biggest enjoyments I get out of games is cracking the seal on that new box and punching things out of the punch boards and having all the cardboard there and having my hands on things. There have been games that I've had that have really amazing card quality where it's almost like a linen-y feel on the card. And I have to really debate, you know, ooh, do I want that linen-y feel every time I touch this card, or do I want to save this card for the long term and put it in a sleeve of plastic? That's a tough decision for me. I like that tactile element. I also, by my nature, am very segmented on the way I approach things. My phone is largely for communication purposes. When you look on my phone, there's a total of 3 games on my phone that I have owned for years. My tablet is for reading purposes. My Xbox and my Switch are for gaming purposes. My board games are for board gaming purposes. So I don't want to go onto a tablet or a computer and board game. That's kind of like crossing my worlds in an uncomfortable fashion.
Yeah, I mean, I can see a lot of what you're talking about. I guess for those listening that have never used Board Game Arena or don't know what it is, there's a few services out there that try and take board games and create digital, like, implementations is probably the best word for them, but it's a digital platform for you to play these board games where they've recreated it right in digital form. I would say Board Game Arena is probably the best of them. There's Tabletopia. There is another one that's blanking. There's kind of 3 main ones.
Yukata.
Yeah. That's yeah. It. Yeah. You know, they got really popular, of course, in 2020. They kind of exploded.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in fact, I forget who, somebody, a large company bought
Asmodee. It was Asmodee, sitting right? there yeah. just waiting.
Yep. Everyone was worried it would become an Asmodee store, and it hasn't, thankfully. But yeah, very popular way to play board games online if you can't play them in person. I'm also pretty tactile. I prefer to play board games in person. My wife is a super user on Board Game Arena. Super duper.
She probably plays far more games on like, BGA than she does in real life. Easily.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. If I could pull up a count right now, it would blow your mind of how many games of Wingspan and Earth she has played.
Yeah. No, that's what, like, I remember in 2020, I was in Illinois. The rest of my family is like in Nashville. And we would have like a family game night where we're just like trying to play code names on some random website. Like, yeah. It was like, that was a game that we knew we liked to play when we could be in person. And then just happened to find it on a website in 2020. Like, I wish I had known about Board Game Arena then. But I totally get what you mean with like the tactile feel of a board game. I first learned Ark Nova on BGA. And that was going to be like an opinion that I wanted to like insert in here of like learning a game on BGA is something I hate doing.
Yes, I would agree with that too.
But I was able to like get in like a voice channel, like chat with a friend who like helped walk me through Ark Nova, and like I got it from there. But that's like a game where it's like, especially games with like a lot of pieces, it's like there are times where it's like I really enjoy the tactileness of it all, and then there are times where I'm just like really glad a computer can just like shift it all for me.
And we've got, you know, James, your wife is pretty heavily involved on BGA. We've got a couple people in the Gleeful Meeple group that are also regular BGA people that I'm sure are losing their minds over the fact that I'm saying that this is not a great website. I think there are things they can do to make it better. So I'm just going to throw these out here. Since I'm a preferred subscriber, you know, I'm paying for this company, so they should listen to me entirely. For one, I think their matching engine is awful. Now, I'm going to throw this out there. Again, listeners that don't know me, I'm in my mid-50s. I am probably sitting at this table the least technologically proficient person. So if I log on to BGA and want to play a game, I click on the game, I click on what tables are available, and I hit join, and I wait for people to join that table. And after about an hour of waiting, I end up throwing my laptop down out of frustration, going on and doing something else.
And that's what, even as a VIP?
Huh?
Even as a VIP, you're having that experience?
Yeah.
Okay, because that's what, like, yeah, no, that's a huge, like, mark against BGA, because it's like I haven't subscribed because I usually get my premium member friends to just invite me to games. But it's like, that's like a mechanic. That's a feature that like video games have figured out. That's a feature that like when my grandmother 20 years ago was playing Pogo online, uh-huh, like joining spades tables online, whatever.
Oh, yeah. I remember Pogo.
Yeah. And so deep cut. But, yeah, no, like that sucks. Like that's a feature that's been figured out by numerous websites and like industries.
Of the three games I think I have on my cell phone, one of them is Skip-Bo, I've been playing since I was a kid.
A classic.
Again, if I go online and say I want to play an online match, I hit play online and within seconds I have a full table of players to play with me. Whether they're real players or whether they're bots that are trained to play the game, I don't care. I'm still playing a game. I'm still having that enjoyment, and it's not taking the waiting time to sit and play. One of our members suggested if I'm having trouble with that matching engine, maybe switch into a turn-based game as opposed to real-time. I don't have the patience for that. I think if I started a game of Ark Nova tonight and I took my turn today and I had to wait 24 hours for my next turn, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to play that game.
I think Dwayne might have some opinions on turn-based games.
Oh, I don't care. I don't care for them at all. I will forget a lot of them. Yeah, that is not that. I was sitting over here trying to think like, what is my preference for playing games? That I'd have to say games in person with friends, games in person with strangers, solo board gaming by myself, BGA with friends is probably right underneath solo gaming, and then like the thought of turning on BGA and just clicking like find me this game and playing with strangers is not fun for me.
Along with their matching engine being an issue for me, the strangers they match you with and their rankings in games are highly deceptive. I played just one night with a group of six other people, many of them not US based. So that throws another challenge into just one as you are translating English words for a otherworldly based group of people. There was a turn where the clues that were given were widow, arachnid, Parker, tarantula. And the person took 10 seconds staring at this and passed.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a rough game.
One thing that would help me like BGA more. So I'll be devil's advocate here.
Please.
I know. So some of the benefits I know for sure is you can play games faster. I mean, you get people on that can take turns a long time, take a long time on their turns sometimes, but games do go much, much quicker. One thing that would help me enjoy it more and want to use it more is bots. They have not put in automated players yet, right?
Why? Yeah.
Because that is a nightmare.
I know, I understand why. But like what? So what I'm really bad at, and why I don't use BGA, is figuring out how to quickly absorb all the information on a complicated game, and make a decision based off of that. I'm just not good at it. I'm just going to own that. I mean, I've over the years, I might have been the person in our group to earn the reputation of sometimes being analysis paralysis prone. I've gotten better at it, but BGA does not help that. When I, especially if I want to play like a new game. And I mean, I learned it ahead of time, but then I go to BGA, you know, and to make it fit on the screen, they have it broken up into pieces and sections, and you got to kind of move around on the screen to go to the different areas of the game and then click on things to pull up information. It takes me forever to internalize all of that, and it just isn't enjoyable for me. I wish they had some version of being able to just go into bots. And so I can go and learn a game at my own speed and not be pissing other people off by taking too long.
Yeah.
But definitely playing fast, playing a lot. I mean, I know people that are currently playing. I mean, my wife's one of them, but we have people playing Ark Nova, just crazy amount back to back to back. It's so easy. I mean, what takes 3 hours in person takes an hour and a half online.
You don't have the setup and teardown of a game. The system is going to do that. You don't necessarily have to be a rules expert, because if you make a move that's invalid, it's not going to let you do it. So
now, that's what that rules expert, like, I have played games in person and then played games in BGA and realized, like, oh, oops, we got that rule wrong. And so that's kind of nice having that check. And then, like, other devil's advocate of, like, the pros of BGA. I live in an apartment. And, like, I have no space for, like, the board game collection I would love to have. And so BGA is, like, a nice kind of, like, supplement to that. And I've seen, like, other people, like, they will play a game that they're thinking of buying online, or maybe even someone else's copy, just like a normal thing, whatever. Try out the game before they, like, impulse buy something, too.
One of the things that you mentioned, James, was trying to learn the game and get paralyzed by your choices. I kind of like that with a live group, though, because you can even kind of watch the thought process and figure out, what is James looking at? Why is he going this place instead of that place? And ultimately, when you make your move, you know, we're all friendly gamers. I've gone, hey, why'd you do that? What was the benefit behind that choice that you made? You don't get that with BGA, because you've got some expert in China who's played the game 500 times that he's making his turns go in 10 seconds. Not only do you have no idea what he really did, but you're still trying to figure out why.
Yeah, and to clarify, in person, it is, you know, for me, purely the classic AP analysis paralysis definition of just decision making, which, again, I think I've gotten a lot better. but with BGA, it's AP trying to find the information.
Yeah.
Like, I know where to look for the information in person. I just think about it for longer than other people.
Yeah.
But with BGA, I'm actually trying to find the information because, and again, this is not on like complicated Euros, not on something simple, but I'm searching, I'm going to, you know, drag around the screen, find the section, and then you're keeping track of players' information. It just slows me down.
Oh, so that is one thing with Board Game Arena. Like, I don't pay attention to other player information when I'm like, Ark Nova is nice because the player stuff stats are like right in that sidebar, but there are other games where it's like I have to scroll to see your board, or I have to like click another tab to see anything, and so I'm like, I'm just gonna go for it.
Do you click over into the chat window and chat with people while you're gaming, or no?
I prefer to go to a voice chat, so using like Discord or using Zoom or whatever. I've even done it, like, I guess called someone on my phone, and so that's where, like, I don't use BGA with strangers.
Okay.
I either do solo games. I don't do solo games because I don't have premium yet. But I just like wait for like I said earlier, the premium friends to invite me to a game.
And I'll freely admit, like I said, I'm not a tech person. So there may be settings in there that I have at the lowest possible setting where maybe I'm not getting the full experience. But to me, that's BGA doing a disservice. It should be, mm-hmm. There should be very entry level. Come in, pick your game, click play, boom. You've got a group, you're sitting at a table, you're playing. It's not, for sure. It's not that. And that's what I want PGA to be.
Yeah, I'll say two other things that are good, I think, you know, in BGA's defense. One is it also helps you kind of really mine strategies on games. So if there's a game that you really enjoy that you want to play a lot to figure it out, but it's hard to get to the table all the time. And so for you to get 10 plays of this game in person would just take forever.
That's what happened with me in Hadrian's Wall. It was a game that like we had started in person. That was also a game that we learned we did a rules clarification wrong, or because it's so solitaire, it's like no one's watching my every step. And so I might have interpreted a rule wrong there. And so like, yeah, playing it on BGA just like over and over. I think I played it like 5 times in a couple weeks and finally like got to a score that I thought was like good enough. Still didn't win. But I was like, okay, I finally changed up my strategy to something that like has winning potential. And it was just like, yeah, because I was able to get that repetition in through BGA.
Yeah. I mean, doing that in person, I guarantee you every one of those 5 plays, you probably would have had to teach it again because a new person would have been in the game.
Yep.
Right. Slows it all down. And then you're just like, I just want to get through it because it's taking too long. Yeah. So it makes that way more viable to really go deep into games. I'd say the other aspect of this, which I think is probably one of the biggest ones and one that we may not think of because of our circumstance. I think we're all probably pretty thankful to have a pretty amazing group of friends to get to play games with all the time. Not everybody has that.
That's true.
Right.
That's good.
Not everyone has a community like ours. They don't even have a local game cafe. They can go find random people. They like board games and they're by themselves.
Well, hey, all you US-based BGA users, just come to Nashville. Come hang out with us. We're great people.
Yeah, let's move here.
I am curious, like when I'm trying to think through my own collection of what I play on BGA versus what I own the app for. And typically, if I like a game well enough to own the app, even if there's a BGA implementation, I'll try to encourage friends, hey, this is a really good app. Let's, you know, download it and we can play on the app instead of playing on BGA.
For what it's worth, and you know, I'll make sure that I make this disclaimer, I have tried downloading several board game apps to either my phone or tablet, and I get the same result. It's just not the same experience for me to play it on.
Oh, they're very different experiences.
Digital, so.
I have the Terraforming Mars app on my phone because I didn't own it until very recently, and I would get together with some friends like once a month, play the game. And so I was like, okay, I just want to try it. Like, I'm hooked on this game. It was my most played game last year. Let's get the app, just see what it's all about, see if I could like get some other strategies, other corporations, because especially with a game of variability where it's like the luck of the draw, like if I can get more plays in that, there's a more higher chance of like getting a corporate, like a new to me corporation. But it got to the point where it's like I learned how to beat the AI and it's no longer fun on the app. And so now I own it. So I'm just going to have to play with people again.
So we're going to veer a little more into the app away from into the app based games away from BGA, but you know, still under the umbrella of playing digital games. The thing that makes the biggest difference for me with a digital game is when they offer a campaign mode in the game. Serbia has that. Castles Mad King Ludwig have it. Just really, really fun challenges. Hey, you know how to play the board game. Use those skills to beat these different challenges that we've set up for you. And that can add a different... That's something that, unless you own the app, you're not going to have the experience. Typically, you don't see board games that are like, here's a list of achievements for you to do. Although some people have made those. But those style of apps where there is something else to do besides just beat up a bot in the game are fun.
That is the type of thing... of the very few things that make me want to play games solo. I've tried to be a solo gamer, just can't do it. Every time I try, I just can't, my attention span goes somewhere else. But Clank has a great app for that, to play solo.
Yeah.
It's like not campaign so much, but it engages you as a solo player to do this, try this. And so it's like, as I'm playing, I'm engaged with by this app, which doesn't exist in the base board game.
Sure.
BRB downloading that right now.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you for letting me get up on my soapbox for a minute and rant at the clouds. I appreciate it. BGA, do better, please. And if you'd like to sponsor our show, please let us know. I won't be present for that show that day.
This This episode's game of the show is Stone Age. Stone Age is published by Z-Man Games, at least in its most current iteration here in the States, and it is designed by Michael Tummelhofer. The artist is Michael Menzel, and it was released in 2018. Stone Age plays 2 to 4 players, but BGG says it's at its most gleeful with 4 players. JK, walk us through Stone Age.
Stone Age has a few things going on. This is largely a worker placement game. Each player starts out with 5 members of their tribe that they're going to be placing at a number of spaces on the board. Many of those spaces are resource collection. So you have food, wood, clay, stone, and gold. You can place up to 7 workers in every space except for food. Food has unlimited placement. Once you have your workers there, when it comes around to your turn, you're going to roll a die for each worker that is there. Depending on how many pips you get on your collective die, that's going to be how many of that resource you get. Food, you get 1 food for every 2 that you roll. While going up to gold, you get 1 gold for every 6 that you roll. In addition to those resource spots, there are other places on the board that allow you to upgrade bits and pieces in your inventory, as well as add more workers to your pool. Lastly, it's also a set collection game. There's a number of cards based along the riverbank at the bottom of the board. Some of these are individual items that can be collected, and if you have a larger set than the other players, you're going to get a more significant bonus. Other cards give you additional endgame bonuses based on a number of criteria. The ultimate goal of the game is to build huts. There's a whole row of huts in a market at the bottom of the board. Players will claim them and then hopefully have the resources during their turn to buy them. One of the neat mechanics in this game is that after you've placed all your workers each turn, you choose the order in which you want to activate these workers. That's key. The game plays until one of the stacks of buildings has been depleted. Everybody ends the game at that point and you tally up the scores. So easy, a caveman could do it. That's Stone Age.
Nice. Oh, look at you.
So what did you guys think? Positive thoughts first.
Oh, I have nothing to say then. I'm kidding. It's a great callback, right? It's 2008, right? So it's not a, you know, not a newer game. Worker placement is older than that, right? I mean, there's some games in the late 90s. That were some of the first worker placement games, but I mean, 2008's going back there, and it's one of the more popular older worker placement games that laid the foundation for a lot of mechanics. So it's nice going back to see some of that stuff, and you can see how it all, you know, how a lot of these newer games play off of that. My favorite thing I would say from Stone Age is the tension on your turn of deciding between this or that. I feel like on your turn, you always have 2 good options, and you know that the one you don't take is not going to be there when it comes back around to you. And I like that tension.
Yeah.
Right. It makes it really interesting every single turn. It hurts when you're like, you got to choose one knowing that you won't get the other one. But the tension on the turn-to-turn basis was nice.
Yeah, that's what there was around in our game where I think you were first player. And so then it was like my turn next in the round. And I'm like looking at them and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to pick one. And it's like not going to be available next time it gets back to me. And so it's like that you're trying to manage like your own like resources and going in what's most optimal for you. But you're also trying to predict what may or may not be there by the time you get to choose again.
We also played a very friendly game with each other. You can be really mean in Stone Age. And a great example would be if the first player on their first move chooses a building tile that requires gold, for example, and all the other players look over and realize he has no gold in his inventory. Well, you just gang up and fill the gold selection area. He can't win that. He can't get that piece of gold. He just wasted his turn. So there's a lot of passive-aggressive blocking that you can do in this game that we really didn't do very often, I don't think.
There are a couple times, but there are definitely a couple times I tried to do that in a way that would also still benefit me, which is like why it was never like full throttle. I'm going to take up every space at the wood area because I still needed like brick or food, especially food. And so I'm like, I feel like I'm constantly managing of like, okay, I'm going to have to get like at least 3 food this round, so I'm going to put a worker or 2 out here, hope the dice roll goes well, and then I'm going to try to screw over someone else over there in the stone pile and hope, like, Dwayne helps me screw JK over.
Food is really important in this game, because at the end of every turn, however many workers you have in your collection, you have to spend 1 food to feed them. If you have not enough food to do that, you have the option to then use your resources to pay for that. If you choose not to do that, you take a 10-point penalty every single time it happens. So that's a significant factor.
There's no coming back from that. If you've gone as far as not being able to even use resources to pay and you're taking a negative 10, you've played pretty poorly. I mean, you shouldn't ever go that bad. I think they threw it in there as getting negative 10, not thinking anybody would ever actually get there. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it didn't happen during our game.
No, not at all. Because that's brutal.
Another pro that I liked about Stone Age is, so last episode I talked about how worker placements, I'm still kind of like on the fence. I've played a few now that I do enjoy and appreciate the mechanics of a worker placement game in general. What I liked about Stone Age is that, like, the first player did always rotate. That's one of, like, my, like, frustrations with Grand Austria Hotel, even though I know our group loves it. But, like, that game, and then there's, like, another worker placement game where it's, like, one of the spots on the board is, like, go here and you will be the first player next turn. I hate that. Because it's, like, just strategy differs. And it's, like, if I know that, like, okay, I get to be first player, then Dwayne, then JK, then James, then it's just constantly moving.
Yeah, not uncommon in worker placement games for that kind of spot to exist, right? Go here to guarantee that you'll be first player. It's usually at a detriment, right, for that turn. Whatever else, that's all you get, right? Whereas everywhere else on the board is better. But it can be harsh if the same person takes it 2 or 3 turns in a row and the person who's right behind them becomes last player 2 or 3 turns in a row.
Yes.
That is harsh.
Yes, because that's happened to me in almost every game of Grand Austria Hotel I've ever played.
Yeah, the person to the right of the person is always last. If that happens 2 or 3 times, that can be pretty rough.
So we can revisit this topic when we're going over our negatives, or we can go into this right now, as far as the first player goes.
Let me give 1 more positive at least, and then we'll go from there. It's all easy to teach. This is a very, very simple, straightforward game. I think it's a 5 to 10 minute explanation.
Yeah.
And if you don't have it by that point, by the end of the first turn, you got it. There's not a lot of really deep thinking going on in this game. It's pretty straightforward.
No, that's what, like, I was even just kind of like going over the BGG reviews of it, helping kind of like flesh out my own opinion. Like someone like described it as like an intro to worker placement games. And I was like, I wish I had played that first instead of like Lords of Waterdeep in a very like noisy bar. Like, I would have had probably a much better opinion of worker placement games had I tried this one first.
Yeah, a lot of modern worker placement games are, I want to do this, but in order to do that, I have to do this. But to do that, I need this, which means I have to go over here. Like, this is not that.
No.
This is like, I have a space I can go to and get stuff. Yes.
I'm going to buy this building that costs wood. I should have some people over in the section to get me wood.
Yeah, that's as far as it goes.
And then at that point, if you want to get real into thinking about the game, then you're just trying to figure out statistics of like, okay, what's my probability of rolling? Like, how much food can I get if I have this amount of workers over there? Or do I want to try to risk it and hope I just get a really high die roll?
Oh, dice.
Is that where Dwayne is going with the negative, the dice?
No, I wanted to start with when we talked about first player, because in my estimation, a hallmark of a worker placement game is there should be variable first player. And it's simple. We talked earlier about, well, you know, a lot of times the first player will go back for the first player. There's usually no reason to do that. As the first player, you rarely want your first move to be take back the first player. You took the first player in order to make the best move on the board. The second place player should be the one going for first player most of the time, and so on and so forth. And, you know, that's just like an overview of most worker placements that I've played. So, boo That's a downside for Stone Age is that it is just going around. I like the idea. I like having that risk to take a chance. Hey, I am giving up where I am putting this player because this worker because I want to be first player next time.
Yeah.
Dice have no business in a worker placement game. There, I said it. I'll roll back off of that. thank you. I'll be here all night. Dice should be used to determine something before you make a decision in a worker placement game. Stone Age does the opposite. You make your decision and then you roll the die to determine the outcome.
Yes.
That's Ameritrash BS right there. That's unfortunate. It has no place in worker placement.
And is the reason you're complaining about that because you had a building tile you couldn't get because you managed to not roll a
goal? That might be one reason. that might be one reason I was a little salty about it. It feels out of place for that style of game because I feel like you have a pretty solid Euro game in there. And then it's like, but you got to roll dice to see how much how many goods and resources you take home.
In my negatives for Stone Age, I did also put that the dice randomness can derail an entire turn. And sometimes that's fun for the other players to watch, but it's not fun for the player that's undergoing it. In Stone Age, you do have the ability to collect tools, and tools will allow you to add to your dice total. You can have up to 3 tools, and they're going to value anywhere from 1 to 4 as you work to build them. 4 is a really powerful tool, and I was grateful that you guys left the 4 tool for
I'll
me in the very
that.
First round of the game. I think I might have had a slight tactical advantage knowing the game a little bit better than you guys in the first round.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, those tools, whenever I play a game, that was my first play of Stone Age, and whenever I'm like new to a game that has a few kind of like moving pieces, I try to just stick to, okay, what is my next legal move? I hope that by kind of like my second or third like decision, I'm starting to see the strategy come into place. And by that point, JK already had like a 4 tool.
Yeah.
And I was realizing, oh no. And it's like, you're gonna like only one worker can be in that spot to either upgrade or add a tool to your tableau. And so it's like, okay, if I can't get to that spot, that's like so many rolling of the dice with no tools to help the randomness.
No mitigation.
I think that was the first turn of the game. I think I was the third player to go. And when I saw that card, I said, there's no way that's going to still be on the board when it gets to me. And thankfully, Dwayne and Emily both passed on.
So we can dig down in that a little bit. I did not understand. I thought tools were one use. I thought it was use it or it would
tick, I did too.
Or it would tick down or something. Mm-hmm. That card passed 2 players by. I think if I had realized how important it was and that they were consistent, I probably would have picked that.
Because that's what I even asked for a clarification. I was like, it returns to the active pile, and JK said yes. But then, like after the game, I was like, I think I asked that about upgrading a 2 to the 3, and I thought I was.
I do remember you asking that,
and I thought I was asking that about tool usage overall. And so that's where it's like JK did everything right. I asked the wrong question. And so it was like, yeah, no, it sucks like having the wrong like mentality about a mechanic going into the game.
Definitely a game where if you've played it before and no one else has, you have an upper hand. But I will say, in the game's defense, after one play, that's not a problem anymore.
Yeah.
You don't have to play this 4 times to become an expert at it.
That is true.
To go back to the dice point, though, yes, it has mitigation in it, but I think they put those tools in there knowing that because this is a Euro game where we're trying to do strategy and we're throwing dice in the mix, we got to give them a way to mitigate that, because otherwise no one will be able to succeed, which I think is a detriment to the game, because I think the only way to win is to make sure you have dice mitigation. If you don't, you have no chance at winning, because you're at the whim of the dice. And you, JK, I was counting. I was wondering like how much of an upper hand you had on us. Not only did you get the 4 tool on round 1, then on round 2, you got another tool. Round 3, you got another tool. And then you upgraded one of them. So by your fourth turn, you had 7 dice mitigation, where all of us had one or two.
And at that point, I started chasing cards that were going to give me a bonus at the end game based on the level of your tools.
Yes.
So, yeah, you guys were hurting from early on in the game.
About those cards. Another thing that hurt both Dwayne and I and benefited you is you are kind of at the luck of the draw with the cards that come out. So like JK mentioned during the rundown, there's cards you can buy that come out that help with end game scoring. These cards have different types, and it's basically multipliers. You want as many of one particular type of card as you can get because it'll be a bigger multiplier. If you start, if you spend a couple of your early turns going for a couple of a particular type of card, no more of those cards might come out during the game.
True.
And Dwayne and I, we were both going for the same type of card, but only three of them came out the entire game. JK's card, like seven of them came out, that type.
Not seven cards, but seven worth of the bonus to at least.
It's pretty close to seven. You had a fanned out selection of cards.
I did.
So
yeah, because it was like, well, JK was going for the tool bonuses. I was going for the food truck bonuses.
I think Dwayne went after the population bonus.
And population huts.
James went after the huts bonus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and only three cards came out that gave me the hut bonus. And at a certain point, you try and pivot, but then your multiplier is weaker and it doesn't really go as well. So between the card, the luck of the draw of the cards, and then also the random dice, it can be challenging sometimes to kind of get a step ahead if the dice aren't in your favor.
There was one turn during the game that I thought was really fun, and it really kind of just tied together for me how interesting Stone Age was, in that I had a building that I was going after, but I didn't have the resources for it. So I had workers on the resource space, and I had all my tools available, and I rolled, and I still didn't have what I needed. But my last worker was sitting on the river at the market stall, which the market stall, you basically roll dice for everybody that's in the game, and you assign out the rewards that randomly come up. And thankfully, at the river tile, I was able to get the one resource I needed to finally complete the building. So it was nice to see that, you know, it did work every step of the way. Even when I failed at one placement, the other one kind of covered my butt.
I do. That was another pro that I really liked about this game specifically, of like when we're resolving all of our actions, being able to choose kind of like which action to resolve first. Because that's what, like, if you're hoping someone else does that market action before it's your turn, they might give you exactly what you were hoping for. And then when it's your turn, your like market action might help resolve so that you do have enough resources for the building that you were trying to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something that's kind of unique. I'm going through other worker place in my head, and it seems like you either get the resources when you place the worker, or you get them. There's a path you have to follow. Think about Kalis in that situation. So the idea that, hey, I'll resolve this and then this, and that will allow me to do the same thing on my turn is that's a bonus for the game.
Probably one of my big criticisms of the game, and you kind of called this out, James. It's an early 2000s game, or did you say 2000s?
2008,
and it's from Z-Man. The art's not great. It's not the most dynamic looking game in the world. It's dealing with cavemen in prehistoric times, so the colors of the game are varying shades of brown. It does come with a really, really nice upgrade in the dice cup, which is some sort of weird faux leather that has an interesting odor to it. But the overall package, I think this is a game that's probably clamoring for a deluxe edition to happen at some point with meeples and upgraded bits and such, but I don't think we have that yet.
No, and I can't remember. I didn't look it up. I'm certain there's expansions for this. I have to assume there are.
There are. I actually had two expansions. One of them is just a set of bonus tiles, which, oops, I included them in our game, which created a little bit of confusion. And the second one adds jewelry to the collection, where you're also making necklaces on top of everything else you're doing. I didn't keep it long. I parted ways with that one. We'll talk about expansions in a future edition of JK Yells at Clouds.
Nice. I think the way that I look at Stone Age is it's almost a split way of looking at the game. If I see it as a Euro game with dice in it, I'm not very fond of it, but if I see it as a dice game with Euro elements, I don't hate it as much.
Hmm. And so it's like, what wins out? Like, yeah. Dice.
I mean, every turn you're rolling a bunch of dice. I mean, it is just as much a dice game as it is a hero worker placement game.
Yeah. Do you think one of my questions on the game, and I've kind of debated this since we played this last week, with the exception of food, you can put as many workers as you want in the hunting grounds for food, but wood, clay, stone, and gold all max out at 7 bodies in there. So if you happen to put your whole tribe there, you're rolling 7 die. If you have a partial group, you're rolling less than that. Is 7 too much?
I was about to say, like, that does that change if it's a 2-player game?
No.
Oh.
That would probably get fixed in a second edition.
Yeah.
Like they would, in a 2-player setup, block off these number of spaces. That's a more,
that's
recent
probably
thing.
Why
the major change the major change with 2-player is that out of your hut for romance, where you're creating new workers, your tool upgrade spot, and your agricultural area, when you have 2 players, only 2 of those spots can be taken each round. The third one's blocked off once the other 2 are taken.
Okay. And those are pretty popular spots, too. I could see that.
But no, I don't think 7's too many. I mean, with 4 players, at the very least. I mean, there were times where all the spots got blocked. One of my turns got messed up because y'all blocked off all the wood.
Yeah.
Partially my fault because I had 2 decisions. I can go for resources and potentially miss the scoring tile that I wanted, or go to the scoring tile and hope y'all didn't block off all the wood spaces. I went to the scoring tile, which required wood, which I had none of.
Yeah.
And then y'all blocked them all off, so I literally just wasted a worker placement spot. So, I mean, it was that risk reward, I guess. But yeah, I don't think 7 is too much.
I was so stressed about those building tiles because I saw that happen to like Dwayne and James, of like they put a worker there and then ended up not doing anything. And I think I had like the largest tribe by the end of the game. I had like a lot of hungry people.
Yes.
But even then, like the scarcity of it all really stressed me out, and I didn't like the commitment to that building tile and then not being able to like fulfill it at the end of the round really just like stressed me out. And so I think that was like to a detriment of my strategy for sure.
Well, sounds like we all have some thoughts about it.
Yeah, I like the game. It's fun.
All right, let's give it an official rating. JK, are you going to keep it to play or trade it away?
This is a classic. It is in my collection, and in my collection it will stay. It is a keeper.
So for me, when it comes to the idea of my first worker placement, right, which, this kind of throws in that conversation, I am actually generally always going to go to Raiders of the North Sea before Stone Age.
Not a bad choice either.
I think it's a more interesting worker placement game, but also just as easy to teach and understand. I'll always go to that before this. So for me, it is a traded away.
I agree with JK. I think it's a classic. I'm going to keep it to play.
I'm going to have to trade it away just because I can think of, without even going through a list of worker placements, I can come up with 3 worker placements I would rather play. That being said, I enjoyed it. If I saw a group playing, I would probably sit down and play with them again. I have other things that do the job better.
There's definitely a nostalgia factor for me in this game. I believe this was the first worker placement game I ever owned. It's been in my collection for a long, long time. I would highly recommend it to people that are new to the gaming world, because I think it's got an easy point of entry. It's easy to learn. There's maybe a couple confusing notations and scoring things on some of the building tiles, but those can be solved pretty easily. It's a pretty straightforward, easy game.
Yeah.
And it's also pretty easy when you're playing the game. You can math out really easily who's ahead, who's going to win. Do we need to push end game? How do we need to go with this?
Yeah, I would, even though I'm trading it away, I would recommend playing it if you haven't. It's not a bad experience. I just have other experiences I would rather play instead.
All right, with 2 out of 4 on our Glee meter, that is Stone Age. JK, you were the winner of Stone Age with, let me see if I remember this. JK was first, James was second? And then I was third, and Emily took last place on that game.
Can we give out the points too?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because we should, because JK had a huge personal best.
So Emily finished in fourth with 96 points.
You didn't have to say my score, but...
Dwayne, you finished in third with 110 points, just behind James at 112 points. All you guys are nice and clumped together within a nice region, you know, nice... solid area.
And then
I'm at 165 points.
All right.
So those tools must have been nice.
Tools.
JK, with your 165 points, did I hear that right?
Yes.
Fantastic. With your 165 points, that means you will get to choose the game of the show for the next episode. JK, what are we playing next episode?
Well, if I say the name Uwe Rosenberg, what comes to mind?
Bonanza, La Harve... Agricola.
A lot of farming games.
Yeah. Feast for Odin.
Big, heavy farming games, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not doing that to you guys. Caverna. We're going to play Nova Luna, which is a nice, easy abstract by Uwe Rosenberg.
Oh, I'm excited. This will be a first play for me.
That makes me happy.
Yay.
Yay.
All right, Gleeples, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Nova Luna. Please send your review to pod@gleefulmeeple.com for a chance to have your review highlighted on our next episode. Reviews must be submitted by April 22nd.
I will reluctantly point out that you can play both Stone Age and Nova Luna on BGA if you choose to.
All right, if that is your method of being able to play these games, please play them and send in those reviews.
So I think we've talked enough about games that it's time to play a game on air. No, not a board game. A game about board games. This week, James has brought us a game.
Oh.
Are you guys ready?
Oh, always.
My brain is ready for you.
All right. So before I get started, a quick shout out to another podcast called This Game is Broken. I want to give credit where credit is due.
Yay.
These are games that have been on their podcast. They are a delightful group of people. Don't know if they'll ever listen to this, but quick inspiration for games about games, for sure. And these are two of my favorites. I hope they don't mind me borrowing them for this episode.
Just as a side note, you have a personal connection to somebody on that show, don't you?
Yes. Went to high school together.
Yay.
Hey, all right.
So that game is broken. If you're listening, come to our high school reunion/podcast.
In Nashville, Tennessee. So this first game is called A Peanut by Another Name.
Hmm.
So this is going to be a group game, and whoever just answers first gets the points.
Oh.
It's 2 points if you get it correct, and we'll have a round two of a different game.
I like it.
Ooh, okay.
So, round one. I've taken out some sections of rules from games that you have all played.
Okay.
I made sure of it.
Nice.
And some of the words might have been replaced in this. And you have to figure out what those words just might mean, and then figure out what the game is based off of the rule description.
Okay. Did you replace all the words with peanut?
Not all of them, but many of them, yes.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It would be much harder if he replaced all the words.
Peanut.
It's Monopoly.
Monopoly.
But also, just to clarify, it's not all the same word. These are different words just pulled out and replaced with peanut.
Yep.
The replacement word is always peanut, but the word it's replacing is not always the same word.
Same. Okay. Yes.
I need you to focus deeply and be sure that you say peanut every time you say peanut. This is a family-friendly show.
Roger that.
Yes.
First game. On your player board, there are 6 peanuts, each with 1, 2, or 3 peanuts. The rightmost peanut is already occupied. The following rules...
No. It's not that.
Nope.
No.
The following rules govern the placement of peanut tiles in the peanuts. You cannot have 2 different peanuts with the same peanut. In other words, as soon as a peanut is placed in a peanut, matching peanut tiles must be placed in the same peanut. As soon as a peanut tile is placed in a peanut, you immediately earn the peanut bonus printed in the top left corner of the tile.
Is it? Oh, no. The bonus is in the left of the tile.
and you put them together. So we're putting tiles into things, and
which makes me think of Zool. But there's that rule about the left one is already occupied, and there's two other things, and your player board has 1, 2, and 3.
I can say it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Say all that peanut stuff again.
Okay. Okay. On your player board, there are 6 peanuts, each with 1, 2, or 3 peanuts. The rightmost peanut is already occupied. The following rules govern the placements of peanut tiles in the peanuts. You cannot have 2 different peanuts with the same peanut. In other words, as soon as a peanut is placed in a peanut, matching peanut tiles must be placed in the same peanut. As soon as a peanut tile is placed in a peanut, you immediately earn the peanut bonus printed in the top left corner of the tile.
I have no freaking idea. But I'm kind of craving peanut butter.
I can make it a little bit easier if you want.
It's the, as soon as you place something, you
get
something.
So I'll say thematically,
mm-hmm,
time frame wise, just that kind of general vibe. You weren't far off with Hansa.
St. Petersburg?
No.
Catherine the Great?
On your player board, there are 6 buildings, each with 1, 2, or 3 rooms.
Oh, Grand Austria?
Mm-mm.
No, I'm just saying names.
6 buildings with 1, 2, or 3 rooms.
The rightmost building is already occupied. Nothing, huh? You've all played it. I made sure of it.
How recently?
This is a game that came out in the last 3 years.
Is it Red Cathedral?
It is not.
Okay.
I have not played that.
It's a smallish box.
It's not White Castle, is it?
It's not.
I feel like I'm at an advantage because I've played the least amount of games.
You cannot have 2 different buildings with the same character. Matching tiles must be placed in the same building.
Oh, matching character
tiles. As soon as a character tile is placed in a room, you immediately earn the character bonus printed in the top left corner.
Character. Y'all, we teach right. So no. Many games.
Yeah, nothing. No idea.
Oh,
people are screaming at their Zooloretto? Radios right now.
Zooloretto?
No.
No.
Remember, Hansa wasn't far off. That's, theme Carcassonne? And time period.
Now I'm going through my list.
So something that has a player board that is subdivided. I'm going to be 6 very buildings, upset when
each
I
with
hear
1,
this.
2, or 3 rooms. The right building is already occupied. Starts with a T.
Tiletum?
Oh. Yes.
Oh. Is it really?
Tealtum.
Yes. Tealtum.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
My last play of that was January 6th of 2023.
Hey.
It's
hard enough finding games y'all have all played to make games around.
Yeah. I also love the fact that the person with the youngest brain here is going to her phone for recollection.
It's because of my phone that I don't have a memory anymore.
All right. So no points for anybody on game one.
Yikes.
Moving on to game number 2. A peanut is completed when its peanuts are fully encompassed by a peanut wall and there are no gaps within the peanut.
Oh, come on.
Alhambra.
There is no limit to how many peanuts a peanut may contain.
Oh, it's Carcassonne.
Yes.
Oh, well done. Yeah. Hey, that no, it's fast.
It. Yeah.
A city is completed when its segments are fully encompassed by a city wall and there are no gaps within the city. There is no limit to how many segments a city may contain. A player who has a knight in a completed city scores 2 points for every city segment. Every pennant scores an extra 2 points. Way to go, JK.
Thank you.
On the board with 2 points.
Ding, ding.
All right, next game. For each peanut on this action space, you can prepare a peanut. Take a peanut tile of your choice from the supply and place it on your peanut board, according to the following rules. Each peanut tile must be adjacent to an already placed tile.
Is it Arc Nova?
The front of the peanut tile has to be peanut. You must pay the cost according to the row of the peanut space.
Grand Austria Hotel.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Boom. I like it.
For each die on this action space, you can prepare a room. Take a room tile of your choice from the supply and place it on your hotel board according to the following rules. Each room tile must be adjacent to an already placed tile. Yep. The front of the room tile has to be visible. You must pay the cost according to the row of the room space. The color of the room tile must match the color of the room space.
I want to like that game so bad, and I just haven't had a good experience with it.
The magic hasn't happened yet, huh?
What?
It's so good.
Wow, it's so good.
I think the first few games were played with people that loved it and so knew every single card. Yeah. I have been screwed over by like the staff. Like I can never get my staff cards like to help me.
Well, same designers as Darwin's Journey, so
we'll see if I
hopefully
like
not less excited for that now. I love Darwin's.
I was like,
Journey.
Maybe you shouldn't have said.
All right, last game in this round.
Okay.
Place one of your peanuts on one empty space in the pyramid that matches the color of the peanut you played. You are not limited to the peanut shown on the peanut you're playing. So you may place your peanut on a different peanut in the matching pyramid. You'll earn more points if they do match, though.
Teotihuacan.
Nope.
It was a pyramid. I figured I'd take a shot at it.
You've all played this one as well.
Imhotep?
Many times.
Well, see, now you the way you say that, now it's just gone from my head altogether.
It's like, I don't remember a single game I've played. Say it again.
Place one of your peanuts on one empty space in the pyramid that matches the color of the peanut you played. You are not limited to the peanut shown on the peanut you're playing, so you may place your peanut on a different peanut in the matching pyramid. You'll earn more points if they do match, though.
Someone said Imhotep. It's not Imhotep?
It is not Imhotep. It's a game you've all played, two of you, many times.
Oh, no.
It's probably Dwayne and I.
No.
Oh, no.
No, he's looking at me. Yeah. I can see out of the corner of my eye. He's looking at me.
And JK. JK and Dwayne, sorry. Yep. We've played this together, Dwayne.
Oh, jeez. I'm trying to think of games that have pyramids in them. And Imhotep. And then the one that we played online, Emily.
It wouldn't be Camel Up because you don't place things...
It is a very hot game in the last 2 years from a famed designer. You might say the most famed designer of all time.
Eric Lang?
No.
The most famous designer of all time.
I'll give you one word here.
Okay.
Let's do... I can't give you that word because I'll give it away. Place one of your peanuts on one empty space in the pyramid that matches the color of the card you played. You are not limited to the symbol shown on the card you're playing, so you may place your peanut on a different symbol in the matching pyramid. You'll earn more points if they do match, though.
It's the pyramid thing that's throwing me.
I thought that's the thing that would give it to you.
No,
guys.
I'm trying to come up with any like
Seven Wonders Duel.
It's very colorful.
Mm. Oh, Trio? No.
No.
I mean,
you're going through all your playlist right now.
Yeah. I mean, I should do that to come up with the answer, but I'm trying to come up with something off the top of my head.
You would think it would help, and it's not.
I'm trying to think of every game I have in my collection that is pyramid based. And the only thing I'm coming up
with. Don't think pyramid based. This is a section of the game. This is a piece of the game.
Mm.
This is a game of sections.
Ooh. Oh, Millie Fiori.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
What's the pyramid in Millie Fiori?
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm
well
so
done,
angry.
Emily.
What if I had said place one of your diamonds on one empty space in the pyramid?
Oh my God.
I will freely admit diamond wouldn't still not have
helped. Oh, no.
Not at all. I was in a totally different realm of gaming.
Yeah, that...
I'm so angry right now.
It doesn't help that I'm like imagining peanuts on cards or peanuts on tiles.
All right, so that leaves us with JK with 4 points,
yes.
I think. Yes. And Emily with 2 points.
Yes. And Dwayne is happy to be here.
Yes.
All right. So this next game, round two, we're switching it up a little bit. This one is The Art of the Game.
Ooh.
So I'm going to hand you guys a tablet that has the picture of a board game cover.
Okay.
You have to describe this board game cover to everybody and see if they can guess it.
Okay.
You cannot use any words from the title or any words that are on the box at all. You cannot describe the type of game this is. You have to look at it as if it is a piece of art.
Okay. I love it.
Okay. And you're right. Just okay. Describing the art.
I was trying to figure out how this was going to work for an audio medium.
But that's the whole point. The guessers don't see the art.
Okay, good.
Yep.
All right, who's first?
If you get it right, everybody gets a point. But the person delivering the description gets plus 1 point.
Okay, for delivering such a good description. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so excited.
I'm going to try and pick games that you are all familiar with these games.
Okay.
Some maybe more than others. So I'm going to try and hand this around to in that kind of way. So I'm going to start with Emily.
Okay.
Emily, describe that box cover.
All right. So I see a bridge leading to a large fortress-looking building from an Asian country. People on the bridge are wearing those kind of like straw, or they might not be straw, they might be like reed hats. Icky. No. But yeah, no. There's also kind of like a tree in the corner and it looks like it's kind of snowy.
Is it Gugong?
No.
Tang Garden.
But no.
Is it White Castle?
Yes.
Nice. Oh, got it. Good job,
Dwayne. Nice.
There you go. One game down. Next game, we're going to go over to... I'll go JK on this one. Describe that box cover.
It's a circus.
Three-ring circus.
No, because you can't use the title.
Fine.
It's a
Meeple
scout.
Circus.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. Man.
Come on, Dwayne.
Most people don't remember that it's like circus themed. It was Scout.
That's one of my favorite games from last year and one of the most... I don't understand the theme. I don't understand what the idea behind the game
recruiting.
Is. I know that you're supposed to be doing that, but I'm like, where does that come into the game?
Because I was preparing for a game for y'all and I discovered that. I'm like, oh, it all makes sense now.
I mean, it does work. It is a part of the theme where you are scouting talent. So I get that. Is it slapped on? Sure.
All right. Okay. The tablet is in Dwayne's hands now.
Okay. Explorers lost in a deep rainforest-type jungle.
Ink and gold?
Lost Ruins of Arnak?
Yeah, yes. Except I said lost.
You said lost, Dwayne. Yes. Negative points on your already.
You could have said explorers, peanuts, in a tropical jungle.
Dough.
And those are the games of this episode, everybody.
Right. I like that one a lot.
We're all winners at this table.
Whoop, whoop.
Is that going to do it for tonight, guys? Are we wrapping up with that?
I think so.
I think that's it. That's a lot of peanuts.
That's
so many peanuts.
This episode's been nuts. So that's it for us, guys. Three episodes in the can. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back soon. We'd like to thank our sponsor for tonight. It was Circuit City, where service is state of the art. Circuit City, man, that is a brand that's going to be around forever. If you are in Nashville and want to come see Gleeful Meeple, we have some events coming up. As we noted last episode, there are 8 events in April. By the time you hear this, it's going to be the 15th at Fat Bottom in the Nations, the 17th at Homegrown in Donelson, and the 21st at Disc Insider in Wedgewood, Houston. You can email us at pod@gleefulmeeple.com, as well as find us on Instagram at @gleefulmeeplepod. Thanks, everyone. I'm JK.
I'm Emily.
I'm James.
I'm Dwayne. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.